Okay, that's always very useful to see how our words could really affect people. Even when I was a school teacher, sometimes I had to encourage people, especially the students. And I think there was only one time in the 1 year I was a school teacher. It was in a class I was teaching maths, kids who failed their O-levels, O-level math, and I had to train them to pass it next time. I remember there was a couple of boys there who played around in the class. And I wasn't calling them war ones, but I said, oh, you shouldn't do that, this is your class to do well in maths, and you should really work hard, you shouldn't be playing around. And they were so surprised that I was actually speaking to them like that, because I was always really soft and kind. And then they were looking quite shocked. And then I turned around to the girl sitting behind them, about 14, 15 year old, no, 16 year old girls. And I said, that told them, didn't it? And the girls laughed, and the boys laughed. And they said, oh, sir, why did you spoil it? But there's no way in my character could I like shout and scold anybody. And I don't think any of you in all the years you've known me have ever seen me scolding anybody. Even though sometimes you deserve it. But I could never do that. And the reason is because you're far too wise for actually to scold someone. You know what happens when somebody is scolded like that. And it's not just the extreme cases of making people criminals, but just making people really depressed and even sort of feeling they can't do things in life. There's one of my mates, I won't say who he is, but many of you will know him, have been to my monastery down in Serpentine, south of Perth. And he was another fellow who he seemed to be just such an amazing, skillful man. You know, when he was an anagarika, that's in training in white, he would be such an incredible cook and really stood out amongst everybody else. And then later on, when he became a monk, he had chores to do, he became such an amazing carpenter. Many of the things which you see in the Jarrah woodwork, if you go to Downer Grove, he did that. And he was the one who actually finished the floor in the meditation hall. And then I sort of asked him one day, I said, how come you never got to university? Because, you know, you're brilliant. Whatever you do well. And that's when he told me his story. And his story was that his grandfather had actually looked at his school results. 1 year wasn't that good. And his father said, you're stupid. You're a stupid man or young boy. And I remember him telling me that. Now, with a lot of sadness, but he looked up to his grandfather so much that he actually believed that. But his grandfather was scolding, you're a stupid boy. Yet he became that. He never even tried, you know, to do well at school and to eventually go to university, even though he's absolutely brilliant. And simply because he was discouraged and he believed what other people said. Moron. Hopeless. Rubbish. If you say that to a person enough, people actually become that. And I learned that. I've said these stories many, many times. But this was a powerful story which opened me up to see just how words create beliefs and we live according to those beliefs, even though they are not very useful for ourselves and others. And that was the time when this was a famous example in educational psychology, where there was two classes in 1 year at a school in UK. And some psychologists had permission to perform this experiment. It wasn't a crucial year in education, maybe about couple of years before the O levels, so maybe 13, 12, 14, around that sort of age. And in those days, there would be an exam at the end of the year, and on the basis of the results of that exam, they would screen the kids. And the top half would go in class A, the bottom half would go in class B. And that's I'm not sure if they do that in Singapore these days, but that was standard all the time. To screen the top kids so they can actually teach them at a higher level to keep encouraging them. And the lower kids went to the second screen. For that particular year, they never published the results. The only people who knew what the children had actually achieved, were these two psychologists and the principal. But on the basis of those results, they split the next 2 years' classes as evenly as possible. The child who came first went in the same class as the child who came a fourth and fifth, eighth and ninth, 12th and 13th, 16th and 17th, and so on. And the children who came second and third went in the same class as those who got 6th and 7th, 10th and 11th, 14th and 15th. They divided the children as equally, as evenly as possible. And on the principal's advice, they chose teachers for the next year who had, as far as they could tell, equal ability. They even chose classrooms with equal facilities. They went out of their way to make it as equal as possible, except for one crucial part. One of those classes they call Class A, and the other class they call Class B. That was all. Even though they were even, equal, exactly the same as based on the last year's exams, they gave them different names, Class A and Class B. And you can imagine what happened. People in Class A, when they went back home and they told their parents, "I'm in Class A next year, Mummy." "How on earth did you do that?" "Well done, son or daughter." "And the other one, I'm in Class B, Daddy." "Right, that's it. Extra tuition for you. I want you to get into Grade A next year." It was exactly the same. And even the teachers never knew the difference. So those who went to Class A taught at a higher level, they expected more from their kids. Those in teaching Class B didn't teach to such a high level. They never expected so much. And even the kids themselves accepted that they thought Class B was the worst class. And what happened after 12 months when they gave the end of year exam again? Those who were in Class A did exactly as you would expect if they had been the top half chosen the year before. And those in Class B did terribly compared to the other half, just as if they were those who were chosen from the bottom half the year before. It was a very chilling experiment, but it taught me a lot about words, labels, and how we believe them, and how we become them. So if you call your husband stupid, what do you expect? You will become stupid. You will eventually believe that and become it. That's one of the reasons why our speech and other forms of labels are really important. If somebody called you hard working, well done, you're a hard working person, then you become hard working. This is all to do with the sense of self, atta, anatta in Buddhism. We create ourselves. Which is one of the reasons that every coach knows if you want to get the best out of somebody, you have to focus on their good qualities. "Well done, you're a really good tennis player. You can really do the best. You are excellent." And of course, then they actually exceed expectations. you never see a coach of a successful football team say, "You're stupid. Even my old grandmother can kick a ball better than you, and she's dead. You're a hopeless." Now, if somebody does that, the usual result is people believe that, especially from people in authority. So parents are in positions of authority. They will believe what you say and become what you expect, which is one of the reasons why always watch your speech to your children. Build them up. Be their coaches rather than their disciplinarians, always putting them down. There is a lot of depression amongst our youth. Suicide as well. For people whose resilience is challenged, not strong enough. Because if you ever want to discover this, I remember just, I had been teaching in the afternoon in Perth, and instead of getting a lift back, I remember Angie telling me when I first came here and joined the, you know, the BM, she didn't like monks being treated like royalty. And I thanked her for that. Please, monks are human beings as well. Please let us open our own doors. Let us take a walk. Don't always say, "Oh, I can do that for you, Ajahn Brahm. You make me feel though I'm like some president. Or like Prince Edward or something." Don't treat us like royalty. So, at this particular time, where was I going with this? Where just how you talk to somebody. Oh, that's right. I was coming home in the bus, because now somebody got these little cards, these travel riders. I really enjoyed going on the public transport. Know that Karen's partner Gerald, he brought me this little senior's car to be able to go on seniors, yeah, I'm a senior now, to be able to go on the Hong Kong public transport. I've also got one for London, that's the Oyster car, and I've got an Opal car for New South Wales. So it's great, but a Buddhist monk actually to travel on public transport. Please, you don't have to pick us up in a limousine. Public transport is great and it's good, and it also gives me a chance to see how other people live and work. And coming back on a bus, I was sitting behind two young teenage girls. They just finished school and they were sort of going, and I was listening to them. I was eavesdropping. How they spoke to one. These were obviously good friends. And it's amazing what they were saying to one another. Now one of them says, "Ah, you've got flat breasts, you'll never get a boyfriend." And the other one says, "Yeah, you've got a big nose, you know, you've got no hope either." And all the half an hour of this journey, they were putting each other down, criticizing one another. And these were friends. And it brought me back to the memories of my childhood in school playground. You'd never praise one another, you're always little jives. I remember just, you know, walking with my so-called best friend. We passed two pretty girls, and my friend said, "I don't know about your one." In other words, they're always thinking I was going to get the worst. And they're always putting you down. And this is another aside, but a very scary story. Probably this is the most afraid I've ever been in my life. And this is, I'm pretty honest. You know, you've been close to car crashes, that's not a problem at all. But when I was really, really scared, it was at Cambridge, one of my friends got married, and of course, you know, being went to your friend's marriage, you know, in the church and all this stuff, and afterwards, the reception afterwards. And all the guys, and the guys of my age, my friends, best friends, hang out together. And one of them started the stupid conversation. "Who's going to be next to get married?" And then one person said, "Oh, Jeff, he's probably the best to get next to get married." And then someone said, "No, we won't marry him." And then they looked at me. My name is Peter. "Oh, Peter, he'll be the next to get married." And they also agreed, "No, we won't marry him." They're actually right there, weren't they? But what was really scary, you know, when they said, "No one married me," and everyone was laughing, it just happened the girl was standing next to me, and she whispered in my ear, "I would." Oh, that terrified me. I made sure I wouldn't run over for the next month. I kept a great distance. Oh, no, that big poor girl. Anyway. The stupid speech we make, we think it's a joke. But for some people, they take it seriously. "No one will marry you. You know, you've got flat breasts. You've got a big nose. You know, you're stupid." And it's amazing, that comes at us so much. At school, I was really good at school, really good at studies, coming top, going to Cambridge. But even so, maybe one day I only came second instead of coming first. Do better next time. Oh, come on, give me a break. There's 100 kids, in the year. I only came second. Do better next time. Oh, come on. Even when it comes to it, you come first. Do better. So how can I do better than coming first? But have you ever had that? People are thinking they're encouraging you. But all you're hearing is not good enough. You get that from your teachers at school. Not good enough. You can do better than that. You hear that from your friends in the playground. Come on, you're not pretty enough. You'll never get an appointment. You're not smart enough. You never get a girlfriend. You hear that from your friends. And when you go home, you hear that from your parents too. Study more. You can do better. Don't talk back at your parents. And this, if you listen to what children hear, you find out it's very rarely they get any positive reinforcement. Very rarely do they get a knowledge. Yeah, good kid, wonderful. That's one of the reasons why grandparents are usually amazing with their grandchildren. Because the grandparents are wiser. They just love their grandkids. They don't have to train them. And you find if you love your grandkids, that's a far better training. Because my grandma, I just remember her so much, I love her to bits. Oh, for a long, long time ago now. But when I was growing up, I could go to her little apartment or flat any time, morning, afternoon, evening, and she'd say, "Do you want some chips? No French fries?" I'd say, "Oh, yeah." And she would just, this is not easy, you have to wash a potato, peel it, cut it, and fry it, and just give you a plate of chips. And then my mother heard, she said, "Grandma, you can't do that. It's not healthy food, anybody eats his dinner." I always remember my grandma saying, "Nope, if my grandson wants chips, he gets chips, and that's it." Maybe physically not healthy, but emotionally there was just such a healthy boost. Someone was loving me unconditionally, not trying to train me, and appreciated me. Now, that power of praise instead of criticism is far, far, far more effective in getting people to improve, be emotionally successful and also successful in your work and physically healthy as well. The power of the mind, positive thinking, affirmations, even recently. Oh, some of these things which I've been saying for such a long time, it's really fascinating that when I start saying these things, I do go against the grain. Much of the things I say are rebellious. I'm not supposed to say them as a monk. even like the three big sadhus. What other monks do you know after talking about sadhu, sadhu, sadhu? I do that because Reiki you got, innovating, it works. And every now and again, you read an article and say, wow, somebody is listening to me. I'm changing. And that one was an article only a couple of weeks ago, where doctors, medics in Australia were being advised by the Australian Medical Association not to use the word pain. And never to say to their patients, this is going to hurt. That is negative speech. Because if a trusted authority say this is going to hurt, it does. Much more than if they just say, oh, I'll just be open in a few seconds. And I remember so many occasions like that. I remember just walking barefoot in this country, and arms were out. And when you walk barefoot in Thailand, you don't know what you're going to step on. And this time on a rough road, it was a 4-inch nail. And it almost went totally through my foot. You know, went an inch or two into my flesh. And I looked at this nail protruding from my feet. It didn't hurt. Until my friend said, oh, look at that, that's terrible. And when he said that, it really hurt. Why did he do that? Shut up next time. Have you ever had that happen to you? There's an alert, not terrible, but when somebody says it's painful, it becomes painful. That's psychology. People you trust, you believe, and that becomes your reality. If you believe people say you're a class B person, you become a class B person. If somebody calls you a criminal, you become a criminal. That was one of my great successes when I would go and teach in prisons. I would never ever call any of those men I saw in their jails criminals, thieves, or rapists. I would never do that. Because I realized if I called them a thief, and they looked up to me, they would become more of a thief. They would believe it. Which meant that when they left their prison, they would thief again. I don't mind praising myself. I know other people just think this is egocentric. If no one else will praise you, praise yourself. You know, the beautiful bits in the wall. Actually, there's a little quote on the back there. Which somebody called me up, I was writing that this morning. I recommend the two fabrics in the wall. And you see under there, there's another saying, I recommend the 998 good bricks in the wall. I wrote that this morning. Good praising, not sort of criticism, not looking at the fault, looking at the good stuff. And this particular memory, which I will take to my grave, or wherever else I end up, was taking a phone call, and they wanted to speak to me. They wouldn't speak to any other monk, and it was a prison officer in one of the jails. He said, oh, wait, I'm through to you. Ajahn Brahm, please come back to teach at my prison. And now my response, too busy. I have to go to Singapore to give a talk. Have to go to Indonesia, have to go to Sri Lanka, have to go to England, have to go to all over the world, I've got no time anymore. I'll send another monk. That's what I said. And this guy listened patiently and said, no, we want you. I said, but no one else. And then what I said, the obvious, why me? I often think that, why me? Why do I have to keep on teaching at my age? I should be retiring by now, putting my feet up, just meditating and just doing nothing. Put me out to pasture. Even if it's race horses or cows, after a while they can just go and run and they don't have to do any work anymore. even those sort of politicians, they can just go and retire and live a nice easy life. Why me? And that's what he said. His personal praise, but it makes me work harder. And I will always remember this. He said, and with absolute sincerity, I've been working in the prison services in Australia all my life. And I'm about to retire. I think next year I retire. And I have noticed something very unique. I mean, he wasn't a Buddhist, he was an Anglo. Or I'm from Hong Kong, I'm quite low. He said, you know, I'm not a Buddhist or a Christian or anything, but I've noticed something very unique. All the prisoners who came to your class never come back to prison again once they're released. They never come back. And these prison officers, they know their clients, especially their regular customers, in the same way that Singapore Airlines. Maybe they don't know me as a frequent flyer. So sometimes you should get sort of a frequent incarceration card if you're a prisoner. So just like you come to, I think there's rewards cards for coming to this hotel. Regular customers. But he said, we don't have regular customers if they come to your class. He said, I don't know what you're doing, but it's working. And that was actually really sincere praise. He'd actually done something. Someone had recognized, and I never recognized this, I never got that feedback. He gave me feedback and I took it really on board. Somehow or other, how I thought, had meant that there was no recidivism. Recidivism is the word when people go to jail, they come out and they go back again, and they come out and they go back again and again and again. Ruining people's lives. A huge burden on people who pay taxes. And people try to harvest to make sure you do your crime, you learn from it, and then you go back and live a good life. Contribute. Somehow or other, what I said was working. I took that phrase on board, not just to get a big head, because praise never gives you a big head, it gives you a big heart. And more motivation to do more of the same. That's why coaches, when they praise someone, yeah, it's a great goal you score. They just want to get out and score another goal, even better, next time. You praise your kid, well done. And now you've gone up, you're not bottom of the class, you're only second bottom now. Good achievement. It encourages people, and that encouragement, motivation, that phrase, is worth so much. And reflecting on what I said and how I treated those prisoners, that's where I saw that I never ever treated or regarded any one of those men as criminals. And that's why I say these days, I've seen many, I've been in many, many prisons, even in Changi here in Singapore, but I've never yet seen a thief. I've never ever seen a rapist. I've never seen a murderer. There is no such thing as terrorists. I've seen many people who've murdered. I've seen several men who've raped. I've seen many, many people who've stolen, broken their houses and stolen a lot. But I've never seen a thief. This is wise speech. How can you name, judge a person on one or two acts which they did? Husband, you're untrustworthy. You are unfaithful. No. Your husband has done an unfaithful act. He's not unfaithful. Do you understand that? Yes, he's had a mistress. That doesn't make him unfaithful. He's done an unfaithful act. But he's much bigger than that, much more than that. yes, someone has stolen, they've burgled houses, but there's many other things they've done as well. They're much bigger, much more than that. You have made mistakes. I have made mistakes. But nevertheless, even though we've all made those mistakes, it doesn't mean that we're a mistaken person. We're not a faulty model which needs to be returned to the shop so we can get a replacement, like you do if you've got a Volkswagen car which hasn't got the right emissions, or one of these other stuff which they have to keep taking back again. So, understanding our speech, be really careful. Someone's made a mistake, standard little story, and be careful, especially when you're raising kids or you're a boss. The story of the two children in the supermarket checkout years and years ago, I heard this, it's an opening door of your heart. Two children in a supermarket checkout, one dropped a jar of honey almost exactly the same time, another kid dropped a carton of milk. Both smashed on the floor, making a big mess. The mother of the child who dropped the jar of honey said, "You stupid boy, you stupid kid." Whereas the mother of the kid who dropped the milk said, "That was the stupid thing you did. You're not a stupid boy, but you did a stupid act. You're not a thief, but you did an act of thievery." The two are totally different. And I was so pleased that when I started reading those suttas, that's exactly what you see in the Aranyabhaga Sutta. The Sutta of non-conflict. Any organization, especially at AGMs, please be Buddhist and don't criticize the president or the secretary or anybody else in the organization. "You stupid president, you incompetent secretary." You never criticize a person. That's where you get conflict and terrible bad feelings. Acts, yes. "That wasn't a very smart thing you did, Mr. President." You're not a stupid president. "Mr. Trump is not an incompetent president. Be careful." If that's what you call him, a Class B president, what do you think he's going to become? A Class B president. You get what you name people. He's done many incompetent things, but he's not an incompetent person. Be careful. Our speech is powerful. It can create situations for the future. A person's not a terrorist. Don't terrorist acts. You call the person a terrorist, put him in a jail for terrorists, Guantanamo Bay, and they become terrorists. That's all they know. That's who they think they are. That's what they become. Be careful. So, instead of calling a person a criminal, you always focus on the other part of them, the beautiful part of them. And every person I've ever met in prison, they've always been kind to me. Always done wonderful things for me. Always been really helpful. Anything we can do for you. And you give them a chance to do something good and kind, and they just leap to it, "Thank you so much." Two of my students who were in the local prison up the road, where I thought that Namu tattoos belonged, I remember them when I came to teach meditation. They grabbed one of them, Nick, never forget this guy, grabbed me by the arm and pulled me over to the schoolroom. "What's going on?" I said, I need to show you this. "Okay, it's going to be a bit late." And he showed me on the school board all these letters from 8, 9, 10 year old kids from the local primary school. And he explained what had happened. Just like in all countries of the world, there's always drug problems with our youth. And I'm not sure in Singapore, I'm sure it's the same, you may be a denial of this. That starts even in the primary schools. 9, 10, 11 year olds, that's where it begins. So this particular primary school wanted to do something effective to protect these young people, you know, from drugs. How can you teach kids the dangers of taking drugs? Yeah, you may get some psychologist or some doctor in there, but that doesn't really make much difference to kids. It's not really enough. So this principal, bless her, just, I really sort of praise her courage. If this had gone into the newspapers, she'd have been sacked. Because instead of getting a professor from the university or a psychologist, she called a local prison and said, can I invite two of your inmates who have been sentenced for drug offences to come to my school to teach these 9, 10, 11 year olds about drugs? It's been many years now, and because of that she's safe. If I'd have told that story years ago and someone would have found out, imagine what the newspapers would say. Now you're exposing our children to these animals, to terrible people who sold death to our community. But she had the guts and courage to do that, and my goodness, how powerful that was. These 19, 11 year old children in their class were in front of two people who'd been there and done it and were suffering for it. And what they said is something you can never learn in a university, only learn from the stupidity of doing that. And they were really powerful. This is what drugs are really like. This is what it does to you. This is what it's done to me. Lost my wife. My kids don't respect me anymore. I found it really difficult to get a job. Remembering all those people I've harmed and hurt. And that's real, because that's who they are, what they did. And when he showed me this, the teacher afterwards, like many teachers do in primary school, in the art class, let's write some thank you cards to Nick, and I can't remember the other guy was, for coming to our school. And all his 9, 10, 11 year old kids have wrote these really, really sweet little cards. Nick, I hope you get out of jail soon. Thank you for teaching us about that. I'll never ever do drugs. Now I know what it's like. Thank you so much. And card after card after card. And this Nick, I've never seen a person cry so much. Tears were streaming, streaming, streaming down his face. He'd done something. Helped somebody. Paid something back for what he'd done. A couple of years later, at Perth Airport, waiting for, I think, a muck to come to receive a senior muck. I was waiting there, sitting down, and I felt a hand on my shoulder. Turned around, a beaming Nick. A really, really smart suit he was wearing, much better than mine. And he said, wow! They did use that term, wow! You know, it's scary, we have to sort of, you know, you choose. Short names, Brown, how are you? I said, I'm doing fine, Nick. Do you remember me? Of course I do. And he said to me, I'm still meditating every day, Brown, I'm still meditating every day. And you can see he was doing really well in life. That is how we use speech. Crazy. Seeing the other part of a person, letting that grow. So if you've got a partner who makes mistakes, don't just look at the two bad bricks. Some women say, well, my husband's got 998 bad bricks. There's only two good ones there, that's hard to find sometimes. Say, yes, but keep looking at those two good bricks. Because they start to grow and expand. That's what life is like. praise. That is the language of love. Motivation, progress, mental health. Kids love praise. They're just these young beings finding their way in life. And all they ever get is kicked down, pushed down, never good enough. And that is, even comes in meditation. Look, yesterday there was a question about, you know, reaching for the grapes, they're so high. And I tell a story about the guy with tattoos who got jhanas. Why on earth do many people think you can't get jhanas, can't get enlightenment, can't get the very highest? Why? Because you've been put down too much. Never think you're good enough. Yeah, maybe that's a bum. He was born with a bald head. But no. If you think you can't, then of course you won't. If you think you can, then the door's open to you. And you see, in the time of the Buddha, amazing people. There was people who were totally incompetent, mentally retarded, this person who couldn't even do any chanting. There was a Chulapandika, and he became fully enlightened. You got serial killers, Angulimala, perfectly enlightened. Padmacara, and she was a crazy lady who came into the talk when the Buddha was giving a talk, totally naked. Now, if some sort of person in this hotel had no clothes on at all and came in this store, what would you do? Get out of here, you're corrupt, that's wrong. You can't have a naked woman in front of a monk. What did the Buddha say? Let her in. Totally naked, one of the monks took off his robe and wrapped it around her. And then she just lost her mother, her father, her husband, and two children on the same day. She went crazy. And the Buddha, kindness, come in, taught her, and she became one of my heroes. When I read her story, and how many people, she was one of the great teachers in the time of the Buddha. It was her story was one of the reasons I discovered that you need the truckload of shit in your life, the suffering, to make you a great teacher. Yeah, people can be wise, enlightened, they can't teach. But the people who've really done it tough, really had a difficult time in their life, when they break through, they become amazing teachers. They know what they're talking about. I can never teach like Nick does about drugs. I've never been there. I can never teach like one of my monks is now teaching about schizophrenia. I've never had schizophrenia. He has. He can understand it. I can never teach what it's like to be a woman with woman's problems. That's why I ordained bhikkhunis, nuns. They can say things with authority which I can never say, I can never reach it. No matter how skillful I am. You need a bhikkhuni, a woman, to be able to teach that. So this is one of the reasons why you don't put down anything. Mistakes, difficulties, problems in life, they are fertilizer. That's why I look at it. You use your speech wisely. Have a difficult experience. You know what? Sometimes people think I'm a crazy monk. People say, oh, I've had a terrible time. You know, I've just been sleeping all this retreat. I haven't been paying much attention at all. I haven't been keeping any rules whatsoever. And they come and confess that to me. You know what I always say? I say, well done, carry on. And that's almost like a joke in my monastery. They said, what would happen on retreat? You sneaked into somebody's room and killed them. What would you say, Ajahn Brahm? Well done, carry on. Nah. Okay, would you really? Please don't test me out. But just about, that's what I would say. Because I realized to get past that and to make sure you never do it again, criticizing, putting a person down, never works. Encouraging the other side of it. Praise is the way to progress. And you ask the monks who train with me, oh, I should be doing something different because I get too many monks in my monastery. I've always said this, it's a big problem for me. That's another thing. If people fall asleep during my talks, wonderful. People are always saying that they don't get enough time to go to sleep. Do my talk. I remember this. At Nolamara Temple, Friday night, a woman came in. During the meditation, she laid down, pointed her feet at the Buddha, fell fast asleep, and started snoring. And some of my members woke her up. And I said, never do that again, please. Because I know that woman. She had told me beforehand. She had this horrendous domestic abuse from her husband.
Was a victim of extreme domestic violence. She was afraid to sleep in her own house, terrified of her husband not knowing if she'd be killed, expecting to be hit, to be abused. So anyone who's ever been a victim of such small amounts of domestic violence, imagine if it was really big time stuff. And she said she wasn't really a Buddhist, she just came there because she
felt safe. She felt safe, you know, in our temple in Perth. And she felt so safe there, she could relax. And she lay down at the first 10 or 15 minutes of sleep she had in place. And I told you, please, don't judge people. You're not supposed to go to sleep in a Buddhist temple. Especially doing meditation and snoring. For goodness sake, be compassionate and kind. That's what a Buddhist temple is there for. They need to point the feet of the Buddha. I told people, she was pointing the feet of the Buddha for about 10 minutes, the Buddha never objected. No way. So trust that. So the point was, the kindness is really important. That's why be very careful. Don't criticize people, otherwise they go away and then come back again. A beautiful opportunity to help and serve is lost. So we always praise and encourage and welcome. Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming into the temple. You fall asleep. Next time we'll give you a pillow on the back. That to me is right speech. Praise, encouraging. If you want to go for the theory of it, when you are speaking, opening your mouth, always make sure of your motivation. Where are you coming from? Why are you opening your mouth? Is it really out of kindness, compassion? Are you really speaking from this beautiful heart? If you do that to your kids, speak from a beautiful heart, they will know that. Thank you, Mummy. And they will grow. You don't need to tell them off. They never made a mistake. Your husband, please build him up. It's not easy to be a husband. You got one. Fantastic. Now you've got one. Care for him. You all know the difference between caring and curing. The old doctor's story. If you try and cure your patients, you will always fail from time to time and they die. You never need to fail if you care for them. You never need to fail in a relationship if you care for your partner, if you care for your children. You won't be able to cure them of their bad habits. You can care for them. And the more you care for somebody, the more they grow. The more a doctor cares for his or her patient, the more cures you effect. Caring for important cure. So a lot of times, those teachers and parents on that little video, they wanted to cure their kids. Not that they didn't love their kids, but they thought, I've got to cure them of their bad performance at school. I've got to cure them of their bad behavior. I've got to make them better kids by curing them. And they use shouting at them. You don't cure people that way. You make it worse. Imagine a doctor who comes up to a patient. You're a stupid man. You have got cancer. Again, how many times have I told you shouldn't get cancer? You bad, stupid man. You don't know how much time you're costing Singapore, all the support we have to give, all the time off work. You bad man. You don't want to do that when you've got cancer. It's stupid, isn't it? Nobody ever do that. You care for people. So why can't we care for our kids? Make that the priority. Caring for them. Not curing them. And if you make caring the priority, your kids will grow, 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 grow. So my father called me up. He told me his father, my grandfather, please excuse, but he was a BASTRD. He would take off his belt and whip any kid who came inside for no reason whatsoever, and then laid to his wife, my father's mother. And he said he hated his father for that. Much more than being beaten himself, seeing his mother being beaten for nothing, just because father was just drunk and depressed. Days before anyone could do anything about domestic abuse. But, he said, when he was at the end of a meeting, he made a resolution, decision. If ever he survives this, if ever he has kids, he did, myself and my brother, he said, I would never disturb my kids that way. Never. Give me all of life. And so many times, my brother and I deserve to be spanky. We just couldn't do it. He'd get out of sleep and just put it away again. He just, it wasn't in his heart to do that. I love my father for that. I respected him. And that's how I became I think you can understand I'm a pretty good byproduct of my father. Now that's who I was. And he would always praise me, build me up, give me confidence to such quality of life. That confidence that you get from praise. And even in business, I'm not supposed to say angry. I did agree I'm not going to work with my business, but there are similarities. We're not in it for money, but we are in it for being a mug, being a teacher, in it for creating people. So Ajahn Chah used to tell me, I'll finish too. Ajahn Chah, before he passed away, actually before he had his stroke, he told me, and it's just one of those things you always remember. He said, I've built many monasteries, said Ajahn Chah, my teacher, but I've never built many monks. And I really took that on board. Building monasteries is now. Wealthy monasteries now, that's not the job. Building monks, building people. That's my business. Building you to be really good mothers. Great fathers, good citizens of your country, kind, effective. That's what I want to do. That's my business. Not the usual business, but that's what I spend most of my time doing these days, building people, not building things. People are more important than things. And I know the way to do that is caring for them. And that's, I can say I'm successful. sometimes too successful and it causes me a lot of headaches. So many nights of going down the monastery, so many nuns at Dhammasara, both of bursting at the seams. Why is that? And they're good ones too. And I'm really proud of my babies. Little monk. You've already seen Ajahn Brahmani, he's a great monk. And now there's a few others as well. I mentioned this to PJ earlier. One of my monks, Venerable Mudito, M-U-D-I-T-O. He sent them over to what's become one of our branch monasteries in Melbourne. And he gave his first talk, which is on YouTube. And people like it. And they say, wow, another good product of Bodhidharma Monastery. And they say, send us as many as you want, because we've got a really good reputation. If you train the Bodhidharma Monastery, you're kind. You can actually smile, tell jokes, make people happy. Easy people to be around. So please, those of you who've got the time, on YouTube, M-U-B-I-T-O, check in on there, because every week or month or something, he's checking how many hits he's got on his first call. And he's so proud. I got another 100 hits last week. It's encouraging him, building him up. That he becomes a better teacher. And I'm proud of that as well. You know, my little babies growing up and becoming adult monks, giving nice talks, serving. So it's work, it's working. My training is I never shout at people. I never criticize them. Always praise. Well done. Thank you so much for going to sleep and not snoring. I really appreciate that. It's really so you always have praise and praise. And that is right speech. And especially for your kids. Imagine, just listen to a little exercise, if you ever do an exercise, take a book with you, a notebook, and just count how many words of praise you give to your kids in say 7 days, 1 week, and how many criticisms do you get. You'd be so surprised. The criticisms of brains are just so much. Way more than the praise you give your kids. Then try it with your partner, your wife. How many times do you praise your wife and say how much you appreciate her and how kind she is and how caring she is and what a great cook she is? How many times do you say that? And how many times when she does something wrong do you actually criticize her? If you actually could actually keep a record of that, then you know why the relationships fall apart. You don't even know it's cancer. Understand what your wife hears. What she hears is you don't really appreciate her. You do! You don't say it! You don't love me. But I do! Don't say it! I know I do! That's not good enough. And the same goes for the guy as well. Guys, girls, you know they're all the same. Don't think men are from Mars and women are from Venus. We are all from planet Earth. We all like to be loved and have affection and be told so. So if you understand that, you have a very easy life. And of course, last of all, go way out of time, always be kind to yourself. Praise yourself. Don't criticize yourself. At the end of the day, before you go to sleep tonight, say, well done me. I've had a wonderful day. I really sort of know words on my meditation. Yes, well done. Praise yourself. If no one else will, praise yourself. Don't criticize yourself. Oh, dude. Bad thoughts about, I mentioned the word business and shit again, those kids singing, I shouldn't do that, I'm a homeless monk, I'm totally beyond control, I should do better.
can't do stuff like that. Always build yourself up. Then become much more effective, happier, and later on have the joy in your meditation. You can really take off from yourself.
Okay, I will finish there, otherwise I'm going to get an article from your classes for talking far too long, an extra 12 minutes, but actually that was because of the video. The talk was an hour, but not my fault.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Okay, go have a cup of tea or whatever. I'll put it in one end, I'll take it out of the other end, go to the toilet.